From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 9th day of April, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom at TotalFarmMarketing.com. The statisticians at USDA will update us on the weekly crop progress report, and we'll hear from Archer Financial Services' Stephen Platt about the agricultural energies. Don Day will be here, too, from Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn for the day settled at 431 1/4, down 4 1/4. July down 5 at 442 1/2, and December at 468 1/4, down 4 3/4. May beans at 1174 1/2, down 7 cents. New crop November at 1178 1/4, down 6. And the soft red winter wheat at $5.72 1/2, down 8 1/2 cents in the harvest month. Naomi Bloom from TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin, now joins us to take a look at the marketplace on this Tuesday afternoon. Hi, Naomi. Thank you for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, let's first start with your quick assessment of today's trade.
Right. So corn and soybean futures today just, to me, really feel like they're riding this cusp of hope for a bullish USDA on report on Thursday. But the reality is that we still have big carryout. So that's keeping prices from rallying at the moment. So, you know, we're watching these short-term support levels on daily charts. If we can get something supportive out of the report Thursday, wonderful. But I kind of am a little bit doubtful that we're going to get anything over the top bullish. Therefore, prices may slide a little lower into the end of the month. So, you know, just something for producers to be mindful of. You know, it might be a quiet week for markets, you know, and if we don't get anything bullish on Thursday, path of least resistance is a little bit lower. Now, I don't think we're going to crash and burn, but it's just going to be hard to gain some traction unless we get something really wildly, unexpectedly supportive out of the USDA.
What are the consumption or the supply things that could change, which would be considered bullish? Are they related to grain stocks? Of course, Argentina, Brazil as well.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. So for corn, you know, we're expecting to see stronger demand potentially for ethanol, stronger demand potentially a little bit for exports on this report, which should bring carryout down a little bit. But I think we've already factored that into the market. So now we have to look to South America to see if the USDA will do anything to make the crops in Brazil or Argentina potentially a little bit smaller than what trade is expecting it to be. So to get anything over the top bullish, you need carry out to come under 2 billion bushels. That would be a total shock to the market. And you'd also need the USDA to make those South American numbers substantially smaller. So I am quite skeptical that this USDA is going to give us that kind of information in the report. A lot of times the April report doesn't really have any big dramatic reaction or price movement on it. So I think I would err on the side of being a little defensive heading into this report.
Let's say the report comes out is it is as most would expect. Not many changes. There will be farmers going to the field, and they'll be asking them themselves a fairly simple question. Can I carry the corn that I have left in the elevator and or the bin into June, or should I market it? And what kind of plan do I need? I know you've probably been asked this question many times by producers. What kind of answers do you have for them?
Well, here's the reality. Like I said, if we don't get a bullish report on Thursday, prices are going to slide lower to the tune of 15 to 20 cents lower for futures prices. We're also then going into price and roll or price or roll. So that's for producers who maybe made basis contracts off of May futures. So now they have to decide in the coming weeks, are they going to just do the final price or are they going to try to roll it to July? So here's the reality. If you do the pricing, you know, then you're stuck with whatever price you're getting right now. Then you're going to be thinking potentially, do I want to re-own it with some sort of call option strategy? In which case, I would say look at a July call option. If you roll it, now you got to be on your game in terms of keeping track of this market for any kind of a summer rally. Now, I did look back at the past 24 years with this market to see when was the price high for July corn futures, looking at the time frame of April 1st until first notice day for the July contract at the end of June. And in 15 out of those 24 years, the price high comes at some point during the month of June. And then 5 years it came during May, 4 years the high came in April. So if this is kind of a normal year, that summer price high most oftentimes will come sometime during June, right when you're busy finishing planting, right when you're busy replanting, right when the weather is switching to dry and you're scared to price because your crop isn't going to grow, is your fear. So you have to really be disciplined and know where your price point is going to be on the upside come a potential rally in summer. You need to be thinking about making sure you're final pricing those old crop sales, and most importantly, where you're going to be pricing your new crop sales. Hopefully December corn futures can meander back up near that $5 value, but let me be clear, we don't have a reason to be above $5 unless we go into a dramatic weather issue this summer. So really, really be mindful of how you're going to pull the trigger and be disciplined and make the sales on whatever kind of a price opportunity can come.
Do you have a rule of thumb for which you work with producers as it relates to their crop insurance coverage? So if they're 75 or 80 or 85% covered, you need to cover the other 15% in some form, or 20% or whatever it is, and you need to do that sooner rather than later? Or how do you work with them as it's related to those new crop functions for both corn and soybeans?
Yeah, so be aware of your crop insurance and how it can be a benefit to you. A lot of times we don't encourage producers to price anything more than 50 to 60% of their expected production unless they really have a good handle on their crop insurance and understand what it can yield for them. So at 50 to 60% forward contracted, well, now you have 40 to 50% of your bushels unpriced. So you also, you have to be ready to do, you know, almost three things at once during the course of June. You have to be ready to price your old crop. You have to be ready to price your new crop with cash sales forward contracting, and then be looking at buying puts to protect unpriced new crop. And the thing about those summer rallies is that when you look back at history, you have maybe 3 days where the market gives you its price peak. So you want to really be aware of being disciplined to get all those three things done, old crop sales, new crop sales, and protecting unpriced bushels, and being aware of your crop insurance and how it can work to benefit you during that time frame as well.
And it's usually in the middle of the driest part of the season, and it is really hard to do all at the same time.
Absolutely. Emotionally, very, very hard. So that's where, you know, got to be aware of charts and technicals or watching the funds. I'm still thinking about Dease corn, how there is a little gap up on that chart. If we can get Dease corn back up to the 503 area, that fills the gap. And then 504, 505 is the top of the downtrend line that has been intact for 2 years. So that's substantial resistance at that $5 area. It would take an absolute horrible drought to get prices to go higher than $5. So I think just be mindful. That might be some of your best marketing opportunities. I would be thinking about not only December 24, but thinking about December of 25 at that point as well. So just, I mean, stop and look at the calendar. That June timeframe is only 2 months away, and you're going to get really busy. So get your plans in place with your elevator or with your market advisor and make sure you're taking advantage of those opportunities.
Thank you, Naomi.
Thank you.
Naomi Bloom is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. She's in West Bend, Wisconsin. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Online, on demand, whenever you'd like. Just click and play from our website at willag.org or look us up in your favorite podcast applications. In fact, you can do that on the website as well. Just hit the podcast tab to subscribe to the Closing Market Report Commodity Week or the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy podcast. Each of the players there have a subscribe button, and you can subscribe in many different applications, including Apple and Spotify. You can also check us out on YouTube as well on the Farm Doc channel. That's at youtube.com/@ FarmDoc. Now, let's turn our attention to the weekly crop progress report released yesterday afternoon. It shows 3% of the corn crop around the nation had been planted as of Sunday. 2% is the rolling five-year average. 6% of the winter wheat crop is headed. The five-year average there is 5%, and the condition of that crop is said to be 32% fair, 48% good, and 8% excellent. Those numbers last week were 33, 49, and 7, and last year were 36, 24, and 3. Now, here are updates from the state statisticians.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Cool and wet weather impacted Illinois last week. Temperatures averaged 46 degrees, and that was 1.4 degrees below normal. Precipitation averaged nearly 2 inches across the prairie state, and that was 1.3 inches above normal for this time of year. Northern areas generally received more rainfall than southern parts of the state. The Illinois winter wheat crop was 2% headed compared to 1% 1 year ago, and also 1% for the five-year average. The condition of the crop was nearly unchanged from 1 week ago at 13% very poor to poor, 22% fair, and 65% good to excellent. That is also similar to 1 year ago. Both corn and soybeans were 2% planted as of Sunday, both a little ahead of their five-year averages. Pasture conditions were rated 5% very poor to poor, 38% fair, and 57% good to excellent. That is better than 1 week ago. Finally, soil temperatures range from the low 40s in northern Illinois to the upper 40s and low 50s in southern Illinois. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loftus, state statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office. Minnesota had 1.5 days suitable for fieldwork during the week. Little fieldwork was accomplished due to widespread rain and snow that hadn't melted yet. No livestock issues were reported. Barley planting began at 1% complete. Oats planted was at 9% complete with 2% emerged. And spring wheat planted was at 2% complete. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their updates of crop progress across their regions. The folks in Iowa were not available today. However, they did produce a crop progress and conditions report. It shows another week of colder than normal temperatures with rain and snow left farmers there with just 2.8 days suitable for field work. But some Iowa producers did manage to apply anhydrous ammonia, some manure, and dry fertilizer. High winds, however, prevented producers from spraying fertilizers towards the end of the week. The top soil moisture there conditions rated 14% very short, 35% short, 47% adequate, and just 4% surplus. Oat seeding for the week reached 32%. That's 6 days ahead of the last year and a week ahead of the five-year average in Iowa. Steve Platt of Archer Financial Services now joins us to take a look at the agricultural energies and what's been happening in the energy sector in general. Hi, Steve. Thank you for being with us. What's your assessment of the energy sector at this time and the influences within the sector and outside of the sector that are taking place?
Crude values have strengthened. It's reached its highest level since October on Friday. Of $87.63, that's up over $8 over the past month. The strength to values has developed in response more to the geopolitical situation, but certainly background support has come from both the supply and even demand side. I think the drone attacks that we've seen by Ukraine, which have not really been played up, has certainly affected Russia's ability to make gasoline and heating oil in terms of their refining capacity actually dropping as much as 15% due to these actions. I think that's a big factor that needs to be watched real closely. And to see how other members of the global community make up for some of those shortfalls. Another factor I think that you have to watch is certainly the prospect for the global supply demand. That's certainly a key consideration. Stock levels appear to be falling in response to OPEC's production cuts that were carried over into June. It appears that compliance with the production cuts have been pretty good, with some members actually announcing additional cuts to compensate for overproduction early this year. Always skeptical about OPEC and their ability to maintain those types of cuts. They are losing market share. Sustainable capacity has been there, and it's around 3 million barrels. So if prices do advance, that production can certainly help temper a move to the upside. I think with the summer and peak driving ahead, the focus will likely be on gasoline demand and the demand impact of higher prices. If that happens, you could see the consumption numbers start to drift back down. But on the other hand, we still have to look at the underlying economic prospects. And certainly the U.S. is in great shape. The European community also appears to be coming out of their recession. And if you start to see interest rates possibly pull back, that could help them as well. Certainly the EIA report tomorrow will give us some indication on stock levels. Crude stocks are looking like they could be up another couple million barrels. But on the other hand, we're still seeing drawdowns in both gasoline and distillate, which is still creating some sense of tightness on the product side. The CPI report is going to have a lot to give in terms of dollar direction and also certainly interest rates, which are going to be a key component, I think, of how we navigate the next 6 months in terms of the supply demand.
Have you talked with your contacts within the industry about SAF or sustainable aviation fuel, renewable diesel, and the impacts that it might have both on the industry and in the agricultural sector?
Certainly the jet caro demand and tightness has been apparent, and there's growing concerns that the demand will certainly tax supplies of jet caro. We've had some problems in Mexico in terms of heavy crude, which has limited the availability of jet caro and distillate, which is helping to tighten supplies as well.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Stephen Platt is with Archer Financial Services. Let's check the weather forecast. We're here in the United States with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. You're a long way from the eclipse, Don. I don't imagine you had much of an issue with that, but I hear you had quite the storm over the weekend.
Yeah, for folks in the high plains, especially Nebraska, parts of South Dakota, parts of Colorado and Wyoming, classic high plains spring storm with 90 mile per hour winds, locations that have over 6 foot drifts of snow, and some areas that picked up 2 to 3 inches of rain. And that was quite a system, and part of the weather that did go across parts of the northern U.S. here over the last couple of days. So there's still that time of year where there's still winter and there's glimpses of summer, and you can find those things usually across the lower 48 at any given time, and that's kind of what we're going to see here over the next 7 days. There's plenty of spring weather to be found really coast to coast.
Yeah, well, I was looking at the weather and needed a new belt for the mower deck, so I went to the John Deere dealer this morning so I could get that changed, because I'm pretty certain I'm going to get rainfall here shortly, and that I will need to mow again today. We have the more spring-like weather here. It's been fantastic. Beautiful 70 yesterday and today, both in East Central Illinois. Will we get rain, and how much, and how widespread will that be, because farmers will be wanting to get into the field?
Yeah, well, for those wanting to get into the field, the rain is going to be a bit of a concern, because it looks like, I would say, a good 80% of Illinois, mainly the central, the eastern, and southern areas of the state, and this would cover then all of Indiana and Ohio, large part of Missouri, going to see widespread rain here over the next 7 days. And it's going to come in the form of occasional periods of showers and thunderstorms. The temperatures are going to stay mild, but there will be rainfall amounts that are going to be anywhere from an inch and a half to over 3 inches of rain over this period, maybe some areas getting a little bit more than that. So it's looking pretty wet.
And then if you get a little further out, that's when farmers will start to worry that they really need to be in the field, and they'll want to do a lot of work. What's the following week look like?
Well, following week is going to focus the real wet weather probably across the northern plains and the western United States again. But we're kind of seeing the pattern repeating itself. So after there's a bit of a break in the weather here across the Midwest and Corn Belt, there'll be a shift to the weather in the west that will eventually work its way back in. And you know, this is going to be especially true around the 19th, 20th of the month. So any break that will be warmer and drier is probably not going to last too long, as April is showing a lot of indications during the last half of the month to be wet for a lot of the nation's midsection, a lot of the central United States. More often than not, it's going to be wet than dry.
What do the hard red winter wheat growing regions of Kansas and Oklahoma look like?
Well, those areas are right on the edge of where the heavier moisture will be. It does look like Oklahoma, parts of the Texas Panhandle, and central and eastern Kansas are going to have a good chance of picking up some of this rain. Now, the areas that we're a little more concerned about would be the western areas. That would be central western Kansas, eastern Colorado, where the rains may not be as widespread.
Thank you much.
Thank you.
That's Don Day. He is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. Just click and play from the website or hit the podcast page, and you can subscribe to the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, and the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast as well. Or you can just search us out, the Closing Market Report, in your favorite podcast applications, places like Apple and Spotify. You can check us out on YouTube if you'd like, and many, many others. You have a great day. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is written, performed, and produced by Logan County farmer Tim Gleason. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.